thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Human rights groups urge political party leaders to address growing political violence in the country after the killing of two ZANU-PF supporters in Chitungwiza at the weekend.
We also condemn the culture that has been created where political disputes can be solved through violence.
The opposition Tsvangirai MDC says it's embarrassed by President Mugabe's decision to attend the Group of 20 summit in Turkey when Zimbabwe is struggling economically.
Some of these summits are not very pertinent, not very relevant to the issues that are affecting us as Zimbabwe, a country that has an economy that is virtually collapsed.
And some vendors in Bulawayo say the government should consult them when it comes to policies that affect their sector.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. Violence reared its ugly head in ZANU-PF at the weekend with a disgruntled member murdering two colleagues in cold blood, allegedly over party positions. The alleged killer was arrested and has allegedly since committed suicide in police cells. Police confirmed in a statement the death of Proud Mupambwa, 30, who was found dead in his cell at St. Mary's Police Station around 6 a.m. today. The late Mupambwa allegedly murdered Lloyd Jambau, 31, and Marco Masenda, 37, on Sunday in Manyame Park in Chitungwiza. One Elphas Jawira is lucky to be alive as he managed to escape from the marauding Mupambwa as he pursued him with an axe. All three deceased are members of the ruling ZANU-PF party, and political differences are said to have triggered the horrific act as divisions continue to grow. According to police reports, the police say Mupambwa told his wife last night that he wanted to take his own life and claimed that his uncle had been bewitching him, resulting in the murders. The Zimbabwe Peace Project says in a press statement it is concerned by the deafening silence of political party leaders, particularly the ruling party, as intra- and inter-party violence escalates in the country. Hill Zimbabwe director Rashid Mahia tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the deaths in Chitungwiza are a cause for serious concern.
We say this is a very unfortunate incident where three lives have been lost as a result of politics. We also condemn the culture that has been created where political disputes can be solved through violence. We think this in itself is evidence to the fact that violence has always been a language that has been understood as a solution to political problems and political differences within the ruling party. And the history is there, littered with a number of people that have been victimized as such. So it's unfortunate that the political elite deny that this is politically motivated when in fact it is actually politically motivated violence.
But how about some Mr. Mahia who might argue that maybe Mpambwa had a psychological problem which is not related at all to politics?
While we don't have the fine, clearer details, we think the problem that we've had is largely that the political elite, the culture that has been created over years, the culture of impunity where when people perpetrate political violence or violence against political opponent, it is glorified and dignified and celebrated as bravery. When it is done against those that are deemed inhuman, those that are deemed less human because they are either selling out the country or for whatever reason, it is celebrated. But when it takes place in-house, it is then denied and called just mere murder. But in our view, this is a clear evidence of the culture of impunity, where people who have committed acts of violence to deal with political differences have been allowed over years to do so, and the law has turned a blind eye on them.
And that was Hill Zimbabwe director Rashid Mahia speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Ignatius Chombo, Home Affairs Minister and ZANU-PF Secretary for Administration, said the police are dealing with the case. A post-mortem for the late Mupambwa will be conducted tomorrow at Chitungwiza Hospital.
The opposition MDCT says it is disappointed in President Robert Mugabe's decision to attend the Group of 20 or G20 summit in Antalya, Turkey, at a great expense to a country operating on a shoestring budget. South Africa is the only country that belongs to the G20 bloc, a grouping of the world's 20 most powerful economies, and Zimbabwe is not. Some reports say Mr. Mugabe is attending as the African Union chairperson. The Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation reported that the president was invited by Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. But MDCT spokesman Obed Gutu says it is embarrassing that Zimbabwe, currently ranked amongst the 20 poorest countries in the world, has its leader participating at the ongoing G20 summit.
There are some summits or some meetings which he should actually let go, because some of these summits are not very pertinent, not very relevant to the issues that are affecting us as Zimbabwe, a country that is an economy that is virtually collapsed, an economy that is comatose. In fact, a country that is amongst the 20 poorest countries in the world. We should also appreciate that only one African country is part or a member of the G20, and that is South Africa, which is fully represented there by President Jacob Zuma. We should then urge President Mugabe to use his discretion not to go to meetings simply because he has been invited. He should know that the country is bankrupt. Zimbabwe doesn't have the money. It is expensive to charter an Air Zimbabwe jet. It is expensive to stay for all those days in an expensive city like Antalya with all those people who are going to spend their time just doing absolutely nothing for the advancement of the economy of Zimbabwe.
But President Mugabe is not the only invited guest. There is Senegalese President Macky Sall, who is also the NEPAD chairman.
We appreciate that President Macky Sall of the Senegal is also attending. But you are saying Zimbabwe is in a very unique situation because our economy is struggling. If you look at the economy of Senegal right now, it is one of the fastest growing economies, not only in West Africa, but in the entire sub-Saharan region.
That was MDCT spokesman Obed Gutu in Harare with reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
Some vendors in Bulawayo say it is their wish that the government and local authorities across the country recognize the important role they are playing in the country's troubled economy. The vendors want the government to involve them when coming up with policies that help their sector. Correspondent Taura Ishava brings us more.
Scores of vendors under the National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe gathered at Stanley Hall in Bulawayo's Makokoba Identity Suburb today in a belated commemoration of the International Street Vendors Day. Besides the speeches and solidarity messages that were delivered, those who attended were treated to some short dramas, including a parody depicting how a number of them are sometimes chased off the streets or arrested and have their wares confiscated by municipal as well as national police. NAVU's chairperson for Rengini branch, Wimbai Manyanye, told Studio 7 she was happy to participate in the commemorations as they help highlight the importance of vendors and their role in the economy given the high unemployment in the country.
Today is an important day for us because we vendors, we are the main industry in the country. And we are the ones who uplift the economy of the country.
Obed Manduna, the NAVU's chairperson for Bulawayo, said International Street Vendors Day is commemorated globally every November 14th, adding that although his organization had marked the day in Harare, it also decided to hold commemorations in Bulawayo in honor of local vendors. NAVU's chairperson, Stendrick Shorwadza, who also attended the event, said the commemoration brings vendors together, helping them to celebrate their achievements and discuss issues affecting them, while also giving his organization a chance to impart to the vendors the importance of being involved in the making of policies that affect them.
We want to have vendors participate and contribute in formulation of policy, in formulation of legislation that protect them. We have seen that Zimbabwe has so many informal traders. If we are to estimate or go by numbers that have been researched over the past few months and years, we have in excess of 5.7 million people in Zimbabwe who are informal traders. And this constituents or this grouping is so big to be ignored in national policy and its formulation.
International Street Vendors Day was first observed globally in 2012 through efforts by StreetNet International, a grouping of organizations that represent vendors in various countries across the world as a way of highlighting their importance in the global economy. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shava.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
we will be taking a look at diabetes, its signs and symptoms with Dr. Mangwiro.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
At least 7 people were killed in Somalia's capital in a shootout between soldiers at a displaced persons camp. Witnesses say the shooting occurred today as people at the camp lined up to obtain food cards. Camp President Habiba Abrihama told VOA Somali that a soldier tried to move people into the line, setting off a dispute that escalated into gunfire.
World leaders vowed today to increase intelligence sharing, tighten their national borders and attempt to cut off terrorist funding in the aftermath of the deadly attacks in Paris. British Prime Minister David Cameron announced plans to host a donor conference early next year to raise significant new funding to tackle the flood of refugees leaving Syria for Europe in the continent's biggest migration since World War II.
And France entered its third day and final national day of mourning today with a midday moment of silence to pay homage to the victims of the Paris attacks. The European Union has asked all its member states to participate in the silent observation. French fighter jets launched massive airstrikes last night against Islamic State's ISIS stronghold of Raqqa, destroying a command post and a training camp.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington, and we're broadcasting on 909 Medium Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
Diabetes experts in the country are urging the public to get tested as the so-called non-communicable diseases are increasingly becoming common, with over 1.5 million people in the country affected. This is the world this month is commemorating World Diabetes Awareness Month. Dr. John Mangwiro is the president of the Zimbabwe Diabetic Association and specialist in the subject. He says early detection of the disease prevents future health complications.
This is an old disease which we are celebrating this month of November is a diabetes month, and this small talk is marvelous. There are two major types of diabetes. One is type 1, which normally affects young people. By young, I mean from birth to about 30 years. These people normally do not have enough insulin in their bodies. They need to get insulin for the rest of their life. And then we have type 2, which normally affect people who are above 30 years. And these are normally obese or overweight people who eat too much and do very little exercise. And these people normally have the same problems, just like type 1. They feel very thirsty. They have lots of urine going to the toilet so frequently. They can present with a stroke. They can present with an eyesight problem. They can come with sexual inability, no libido, not liking having sex. They can also appear with wounds that do not heal easily. And they can also present with, heart problems.
What are the statistics showing you when you compare the number of people in Zimbabwe that had diabetes last year to this year?
We do not have that close statistics. What we have is old statistics. But from studies from other countries, we are finding that a study which was done in Kenya shows that in rural areas, the prevalence is about 0.5. When you go to towns, it's about 7.5. And our lives with the Kenyans and Ugandans is almost the same. So I presume that our statistics is still the same, but almost half that population of 10 to 13% does not know that they are diabetic. And so we are busy trying to have these statistics updated, but the ministry is quite busy doing that as well.
What are some of the causes of diabetes, and what would you recommend for those that are listening to do in order not to have diabetes in future?
Type 1, marvelous. There's nothing they can do, but type 2, the one I said, alluded to earlier on, it's mainly people who live a sedentary lifespan, who eat a lot of these unrefined foods. Refined foods, I'm very sorry. The unrefined foods are the ones we encourage people to eat. People nowadays have made a reverse of how we eat. In the past, people used to eat their breakfast, then work the whole day. Nowadays, people eat very little in the morning and eat much unwanted food, especially at night when they are going to sleep, when they no longer need to use it. And the body, once you overeat and store the energy, the body converts that to fat, and the fat is then the one that leads to obesity. Once one is obese, they are prone to type 2 diabetes mellitus. So I encourage the listeners to, one, eat more food in the morning, and it must be balanced. If you take a plate in the morning and to divide your plate into halves, the first half or the half must be full of vegetables. And the second half, divided, the little quarter that's there must have protein, and just two pieces of meat of a nut box will be enough. And then starch must be something fist size. Your own fist should be enough if you are not working very hard. But if you are doing manual work, then it is even a two of your fist size carbohydrates. And in terms of priority, rapopo is better, followed by sorghum and munga. Then maize can come, but it should be unrefined. Even what we call in Shona mutakura mundai should be enough even as breakfast. And at night we eat very light meals, because if you overeat, then it's a problem. Marvelous.
What would you encourage those? You said that there are a number of people that are living with diabetes, either, you know, and they are not aware. What would you encourage those people to do, or just the general public to do?
I encourage the general public, marvelous, to have their sugars tested by their doctors, by the clinics, at government hospitals, or even via pharmacies. They can just have their sugars tested, because it's important for one to know. Like I said earlier on, sugars must be between 3.6 to 6.8 when someone has not eaten anything in the morning. If it's above that, one must see their doctors for confirmation. And after food, sugars must be below 11, say 2 hours after food, must be 11 millimoles or less. And there's one test we do now that can test 3 months backwards, called glycosylated hemoglobin, HbA1c. Your readings must be below 6.5 up to 4. So patients can, or people can just go and have their sugars tested before we get into complications. People must be doing this maybe once a year if one is free of diabetes. But if you have one who has diabetes, they can have their sugars checked more frequently according to what their doctor or nurses recommend them to do. Marvelous.
And also, what about for those that are actually living with diabetes? What do you recommend for them just to make life livable?
Yes, they must have their own small machines to check their diabetes regularly. They must also have their eyes inspected by eye specialists at least once a year. They must also have their feet checked by, fortunately in Zimbabwe we now have a podiatrician. They must have their feet checked regularly to make sure they have sensation and they don't have wounds that might affect them. They must also have their diabetes checked regularly. And they must also have their heart checked by specialists and their blood checked regularly to make sure their kidneys, urine and livers are functioning properly. Marvelous.
That was Dr. John Mangwiro, president of the Zimbabwe Diabetic Association, speaking to us from Harare.
Some farmers in Manicaland, Matabeleland, North Maswingo and Midlands provinces say lack of draft power, costly agricultural inputs and delayed rains are clear signs that Zimbabwe is heading for a disastrous cropping season. Some farmers who spoke to Studio 7 today say they are almost giving up even before the onset of the rains, as domestic animals used for tilling the land are too weak, while maize and other agricultural inputs are too expensive. One of the farmers, Andrew Maposa of Lupane District in Matabeleland North Province, tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube farmers need the state help to avert a food crisis next year.
It's already too late for farming by now.
So what are you going to do, you know, if it's too late?
We are no longer preparing for farming like now.
What are you doing right now?
Well, I'm just looking for this week to buy some food to eat to survive for the next year, because by now the rainfalls are too late, so we can't really plan anything. But only trying, it will be a try if you are trying to plan for farming by this hour. So almost a quarter of the season, the rain season, but the rainfall is not yet falling.
If the situation continues like that, Mr. Maposa, what is going to happen?
The situation it will become hard and become light as time goes on. Otherwise, next year might be good.
When it comes to maize seed, how expensive is it in stores around that area?
Yeah, they are expensive, but even to budget that equipment for buying the maize seed, it's too difficult since there is no rainfall.
So now, if people can't afford to buy maize seed, what are they going to do next?
The government must look to their own, to its own people, so that they can get something to do if rains come.
Yes, in what way can the government help?
If some seeds, so that the farmers can get something to plow.
That was Lupane farmer Andrew Maposa speaking with Studio 7 from Daluka Ward in Lupane.
Meanwhile, rural development expert Everson Dlovu says farmers should now seriously consider planting drought-resistant crops instead of maize.
We got a briefing from the Met Department on the El Nino thing. It's a possibility, and it will appear that in the bad areas, we might receive rain only for the first 4.5 months or so. So I would advise farmers to try and construct some storage facilities, canals, so that at least they can collect maximum runoff in their field. Then that will ensure that at least for the next 2 or so months, their soils are better off.
Some villagers are actually failing to get some agricultural inputs. So what should they do, Mr. Ndlovu?
In the drier areas, I would advise our farmers not to even go for maize. Let them go for rapoko, let them go for sorghum, let them go for millet. You know what? There is a market for these crops. Even if they don't want to feed on it, they'll still harvest and sell and go and buy maize meal, right? And in terms of seed, there is little currently available in the market, but they can still get to, say, in Bulawayo, to Renkini, they can still get to the marketplace, you know, where we sell our vegetables. There are farmers from Cholocho who actually produce seed, so they can buy from these farmers.
That was Everson Dlovu, a rural development expert, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. The El Nino weather phenomenon caused by the warming Pacific Ocean is expected to devastate eastern and southern African nations this year and in 2016.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States, which provides over $95 million to HIV and AIDS funding to Zimbabwe through the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR, is refocusing its support to areas and populations with the highest burden of disease, a senior U.S. Embassy official in Harare said on October 27th. PEPFAR is committed globally to go where the virus is, targeting interventions for populations at greatest risk in areas of greatest HIV incidence. PEPFAR resources remain substantial at $128.7 million, including an additional funding for DREAMS, an ambitious partnership to reduce HIV infections among adolescent girls and young women, and voluntary medical male circumcision scale-up, but are insufficient to meet the growing demand for treatment and other services, said Robert Scott, Deputy Chief of Mission at the U.S. Embassy. In line with UNAIDS' fast-track strategy, allocation of resources will focus on achieving the greatest impact to reach epidemic control in a short space of time. Scott was speaking at a health policy dialogue session organized by the Southern African Political and Economic Series. The meeting brought together representatives of government, the private sector, development partners, and civil society organizations. Scott said PEPFAR resources will be concentrated in the 36 scale-up districts and 541 sites requiring intensive support and will focus efforts on populations with the highest numbers of new infections and people living with HIV. He said efforts to sustain key care and treatment activities in 53 high-volume sites across the entire country will continue. Target populations, he said, were identified based on the UNAIDS hotspot mapping, demographic health survey, and program data. High-risk and vulnerable populations, including sex workers, adolescent girls and young women, as well as individuals living in mining areas, growth points, and areas with migrant workers, among others. Since 2006, PEPFAR has provided over $650 million to Zimbabwe. As a direct result of this continuous support, by the end of 2014, 160,000 people were on antiretroviral therapy and receiving related HIV services and care. The policy dialogue session was held to facilitate dialogue among stakeholders involved in health services delivery in Zimbabwe and covered a number of key policy issues, including health financing and insurance, coordination, and human resources retention. The U.S. is proud to work with Zimbabwe's health ministry and multilateral organizations in the development and implementation of a health strategy that meets the needs of the people of Zimbabwe.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will talk and lead discussions about intra-party violence in ZANU-PF and the country, among other issues.
Now to recap on today's top stories.
Human rights groups urge political party leaders to address growing political violence in the country.
The opposition MDCT says it is embarrassed by President Mugabe's decision to attend the Group of 20 summit in Turkey when Zimbabwe is struggling economically.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntunga Milinkomo. This is Chris Gande in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye saying good night.